Hello, and welcome to the Missions Podcast, a show that explores your hard questions on helping goers think and thinkers go. I am Scott Dunford, and not joined today by my illustrious co-host and the one who normally starts off the show, Alex Kochman. Alex Kochman got called away some important missional duties, and so we are excited to just join one-on-one, and we are glad that you tuned in today, both whether you're watching on YouTube or whether you're tuning in to one of our podcast streams. And I'm well excited to talk about a topic that we don't often talk about here on the Missions Podcast, but it ends up affecting every single missionary, if not every single church. I know churches that have had to make hard decisions about who to support and who not to support, and even dropping missionaries from support because of lack of financial means. I also know missionaries who are put in a tough, difficult situation when they come to the end of their ministries about, hey, how do we continue in ministry? How do we transition out of ministry? How do should churches keep supporting us as we come off the field? Or do we have enough funds to be able to retire in the way that people in North America generally retire? And so I'm excited to have Joshua Stowe on our show. We're going to talk about financial strategies, and he is a financial strategist and partner at Dominion Wealth Strategists. I'll let him talk a little bit more about that, where he helps Christians apply biblical wisdom to wealth building, stewardship, and legacy. He has a biblical worldview and a heart for the church, and he equips believers to take dominion in their finances and leave an inheritance, not just for their children, as obviously the book of Proverbs says, to your children's children as well, but also for the advancement of the gospel. So welcome, Josiah. Great to have you on your show. Great to have you on our show, I should say. And tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Yeah, well, it is good to be here. So my name is Josiah Stowe. I am the partner and co-founder of Dominion Wealth Strategists, kind of a two-man team at first, and now I've got about seven agents. So growing and wanting to just take dominion over your finances. So we started this company with the idea in mind to help the church, rather specifically the Reformed Church, so Calvinistic, Covenantal, Confessional. But obviously, the kingdom of God is a little bit bigger than that. So if you don't fall within those sort of narrow parameters, that's just fine. As long as you love Jesus, we're happy to help you. We just don't want to be putting more money in the hands of those who hate God. That's sort of the idea. It's the wealth of the wicked is stored up for the righteous. We're here to sort of help facilitate that transaction and put the money back in the hands that it should be in. So we do a lot at Dominion, and it's been a sort of growing enterprise. We started out just kind of on the life insurance side, but now we have resources for basically everything: budgeting, debt management, savings accounts, life insurance, obviously. But we also do retirement planning, estate planning, business coaching. We've got referral partners for wholesaling gold and for health insurance and for taxes. So we do a lot here. It's kind of the hope is to be the one-stop shop for all things financial for the church, and to do so rightly without compromise. To bring you the highest quality financial education, advice, and strategy, and to do so from a biblical worldview, pulling an exegetical argument for everything that we do, as opposed to just taking general financial advice and trying to sprinkle some Bible verses on it and pretend that that sanctifies it. Well, that's kind of the long and short of Dominion, and I suppose a little bit about my background might help. I'm California born and raised. Grass Valley, technically the Great Republic of Rough and Ready, if you know where that tiny little village is. And I never went so far as San Francisco. That's too far south for me. So
you keep I've never San been as far north as Grass Valley, so there we go.
No worries. It's like the Bethel, Redding area and all that good stuff. Chico, California paradise before it burned down. But moved a lot around Northern California. Joined the Army in 19. Spent 5 years as a chaplain's assistant, technically a religious affairs specialist, 56 Mike. 3 years in an infantry battalion, 2 years as the funds technician for Fort Campbell. Moved on after getting out of the military to be the executive administrative assistant to the vice president of operations and finance at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. Longest title I've ever had. And worked there for about 8 months, largely because handling their $31 million annual operating budget was apparently only worth $12.50 an hour. You know, working at a seminary is just how it goes, right? So I gave them a lot of my time, a lot of my expertise, and then moved on to personal finance. I was a little tired of organizational finance, helping broke seminary students not spend their entire discretionary income at the seminary coffee shop that I helped build was big influence on making sure that, okay, hey, there's an issue here. There's a lot of bad advice out there. There's a lot of people who are highly convinced of certain principles or certain ways to do finance that are just patently false. There's a need. It seems that God has called me to fill this need. So after three whole semesters of seminary, ended up starting my own company, Dominion Wealth Strategist, to sort of fit that bill after a short stint at a few other financial companies that I disagree with on moral grounds. So that's the long and short of Dominion itself and sort of how I ended up starting it.
You know, growing up, in the church around missionaries and missions, and then, of course, being in the missions world for the last, I don't know how many odd years, there is a mentality in some corners of the mission world where money is bad, and even to the point of saying, hey, you can't really be faithful to God unless you're scraping by, unless you're broke, unless you're living every moment like George Mueller did with a hand outstretched to God saying, hey, Lord, fill it today or I'm going to die. And I know missionaries that didn't raise support. And then contrast that, I do think that I do appreciate this about ABWE. It was kind of a contrast coming into ABWE where sometimes missionaries felt guilty because they had to raise full support and they raised money for their retirement fund and they raised money for their children's college education. And so help us think through that. Is it biblical for Christians, especially missionaries, including missionaries, to pursue wealth building?
Yes.
Or thinking about their finances in that way? Or should we see that as contrary to gospel living?
Yeah, I've been dealing with this a lot by the nature of my business, where there seems to be a common conflation of piety and poverty, where we see, as far as I'm concerned, active misinterpretation of scripture in order to justify that principle too. If I had to trace it back historically, I'd say the prosperity gospel is probably to blame initially, that huge error into conflating the future spiritual promises of the church and our future realities as present realities, that God promises us health and happiness and wealth here and today, which he doesn't. And so as a sort of overcorrection to that greed, we might say, we've ended up in a sort of Gnostic asceticism where, okay, well, the earth is bad. Somehow, even though God called it good, the earth and this earthly things are bad, and wealth is a necessarily corrupting influence, even though scripture never says that. Therefore, I need to detach, not build anything here in this present reality, not build any wealth, not make anything too fancy, so that I can be the wandering pilgrim, the wayfaring stranger, and leave my children in just as much poverty as I was in so that they can do the same. For better, well, I would say for better or for worse, but that's just for worse. That's not the biblical take on wealth at all. Where we should. I think there's actually a moral onus for us to build wealth. That's part of the cultural mandate in Genesis 1, the dominion mandate, essentially. Go, therefore, and take dominion, which involves basically gardenizing the planet and creating wealth. You do good work. It should necessarily be productive work, and it should produce something akin to wealth. A man who owns a field and who is faithful with it will end up with a lot more grain than he had when he started and the ability to buy more fields so that he can do the same. A man who is faithful over his flock will take care of his flock and the flock will grow. We see this exponential growth curve in several places early on in Genesis, where even like Jacob under his uncle, I suppose uncle-in-law, doing that with the goats, right? So he was able to grow his flocks exponentially and increase his wealth massively. So Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Solomon, David, even onto like Nehemiah, we see several biblical figures who are in fact wealthy, and they're not called out for being like, oh no, don't be like them, because they were particularly righteous and they were only able to handle that wealth because of my special calling on their lives. These men were good, honest men, generally powerful in their areas, and they were good and righteous. And they really just followed biblical principles of wealth building. And surprise, surprise, they ended up with a lot of wealth. So I'd say it is a moral good for Christians to build wealth and a moral good for Christians to be the ones who are wealthy. I find it far easier to take a Christian and make them wealthy than it is to take a wealthy person and make them Christian. That is still certainly a goal, but something about, camels and eyes of needles and all that good stuff and Calvinism. So we want to make sure that we're just doing our best to be faithful with what we have been set over and to grow that so that we can leave something that we could reasonably call an inheritance to our children and our children's children. And that inheritance isn't just immaterial wisdom and stuff. It's legitimate inheritance. It's stuff that you should be leaving to your family.
I'm sure you've seen the cartoon of the giant needlehead and then the scientists that are trying to shrink down the camel, and they're like, they almost got it, where they can get the camel through the eye of the needle. Right. As you're saying this, I'm sure others on other sides are going, hey, this sounds a lot like what might be being said just a few miles over from you over at Bethel in the prosperity gospel. How is what you're saying differ from what the prosperity gospel is teaching?
So the prosperity gospel basically says that your faith, your action, what you do with respect to your spiritual life with God will necessitate or earn God's worldly favor. If you sow a seed of 10% of your gross income, because it's always 10% of your gross income, strangely, or more, an extra $1,000 gift, then God will give you blessing. He will make you healthy. He will give you healing. So it turns the gospel into it's obviously not the gospel anymore. And it turns what should be a regular, faithful, generous giving into a transactional approach. Mm-hmm. I give because God will give me more. And it becomes a selfish thing on top of that. So again, it's taking the future realities of our spiritual life, new heavens and new earth, when we will have an incredible amount of wealth and there will be no more crying or death or pain anymore, and trying to bring those forward into reality as it is. Sort of an attempt to immanentize the eschaton, but in a way that's not biblical. It's not an emphasis on the going forth of the gospel. It's an emphasis on bringing forward promises that are meant for our future eternal selves. And it doesn't work. It's not exegetically foundational. It's emotionalism primarily. Whereas this is just the old school, like puritanical approach to wealth. This is just the biblical approach to wealth. You are over a little. He who is faithful over a little will be set over much. The parable of the talents, the faithful servant, where apparently Jesus expected 100% ROI from the servant he gave 10 talents to, he got 10 back. The servant he gave 5 talents to, he got 5 back. And the servant he gave 1 talent to, according to his skills, buried it. It was still worth $5,000 worth of silver when he dug it back up. But he said, "You wicked and unfaithful servant, you should have at least put my money in the bank so I could have received what was my own with interest when I returned." And today, if you carry cash around, you're actually losing 3 or 4% per year minimum due to inflation. So you're worse than the wicked servant if you're not actively deploying your stewarded capital. So there's a lot involved there. That's a big question, I might say. But we're different from the prosperity gospel in so many foundational ways that it's hard to even start to answer the question. This is reformed wealth, or the reformed view on wealth. I'd say the Christian view on wealth, as opposed to the weird twisting and stretching of the biblical mandate to grow wealth that the prosperity gospel has taken.
As we think through the New Testament, right? So you have the Old Testament that you clearly see that pattern for sure. Even the promises to Israel are very clear. If you do these things, you're going to prosper in the land. Right. But in the New Testament, sometimes it feels like a different vibe, right? One, you have massive warnings against the pursuit of wealth, the difficulty of a wealthy person even entering into the kingdom of God. And then you have like the example of Paul, right? Where really living, it seems like in very meager means and very dependent often on the church to support them. And I think that that's kind of where a lot of missionaries are wrestling with that concept of saying, hey, you know, the model here is that we are dependent on God and dependent on his people to support us. It feels like pursuing wealth in some other way feels a little bit like against my calling. So how do you reconcile those passages warning against riches with the call to wise financial planning and inheritance building that we see in Proverbs and in the Old Testament?
It's the same God who wrote both Testaments. I'm a Reformed Baptist, so I actually expect a little bit more continuity rather than discontinuity between the two Testaments. So I don't split up the Bible in 7 different ways and pretend like certain passages are no longer relevant. So we do want to make sure that from that approach, the same God who told us to go and take dominion, the same God who gave us the cultural mandate, the same God who, when there was only 2 people on the earth, made sure to mention that there's gold and precious stones in the land of Havilah. Go down there, there's a medium of exchange and a store of wealth. There's only 2 people. So that same God is the same God in the New Testament. So all of those warning passages are certainly important because money, while it doesn't have a corrupting influence on its own, the easiest way I've been able to explain it is that money gives you the freedom to act in public what you already are in private. It just eliminates the consequences. There's no longer an economic consequence for you saying whatever you want to online, right? or for doing whatever you want to in public. And you can buy a whole lot more vices for sure. So there, it's certainly a higher level of stewardship. The same could be said for like a man having a wife. That is an incredible gift of God, and it can be abused. You can make an idol out of your wife and of your kids. You can have them basically absorb all of your energies, and you have nothing left to give. Where technically, biblically speaking, your vocation is actually supposed to come first. The woman is the helper to the man's mission. The woman is not the man's mission. Neither are his children. They're all supposed to be a helpmeet for what he does vocationally, if we want to get technical. All right, so all those warning passages, like no man can serve two masters, you cannot serve God and mammon, this deceitfulness of riches choke the word and it proves unfaithful. Truly, I say to you, only with difficulty can a rich person enter the kingdom of heaven, for it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle. The cares of this world are the deceitfulness of riches and the desires of other things as they choke out the word. Again, this is all like just the Gospels. We've got 1 Timothy, as for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty, nor set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches. James 1, 9 through 11, the rich in his humiliation, because like a flower of the grass, he will pass away. James 2, rebuke the favoritism toward the rich. Are not the rich the ones who oppress you? So we have tons of warning passages in the New Testament, but we also have warning passages in the Old. Right? Read through Proverbs. Tons of warning passages about hastily gotten gains and treating wealth as if it's more precious than wisdom, right? Where you're not supposed to treat the things of this world as more precious than they are, but a right view of wealth will strengthen the lesser to greater argument that those things make. To bring it more close to home for most of you. We are called to love God more than our family, more than our wife, more than our kids. I'd say everyone can agree to that. Mm-hmm. In fact, Jesus puts it so strongly, like, if you do not hate your mother and father, you do not love me. So it needs to be such a stark contrast. That is not a call for us to hate our wives, hate our mothers and fathers, and hate our kids so that we can love God. It's saying, oh, well, okay, if I do rightly love my family, and it is an incredible amount of love, an incredible amount of commitment, then my passion toward God should be all the greater. It forces our love even higher because we have a right view and a high view of the good mundane things. It elevates our understanding of the, let's say, transmundane things, so those things that are beyond it. So if you're trying to eschew earthly wealth because you don't want to love it more than God or to serve it more than God, that's the wrong attitude. It's not an eschewing of wealth. It's not a putting it away, not an active poverty mindset that's going to force you to love God. It's okay. Hey, these are great things. I'm enjoying the good gifts that God has given me, and I love him all the more. While they could be a distraction, they're also a wonderful resource. As any missionary could tell you, I'm assuming that's most of the audience is missionaries, you ask people for money mm-hmm. on a regular basis. So you understand the importance of money. You just don't want to be the ones that are earning it. At least like 90% of the time. You would rather not have a tent maker job. You'd rather go full time in ministry. And the worker does deserve his wages, but those wages have to be earned by someone. So you're eschewing, let's say, economic growth on one hand, and then enjoying the fruits of that economic growth in the other. As long as you're not the one who generates it. So it seems a strange attitude to me to say I actively pursue poverty so that I can serve God better, when you are only able to do that because of the excess wealth of others.
We hope you're enjoying this conversation about missions, theology, and practice to help goers think and thinkers go. And you know that part of the mission of this show is to do exactly that, to take people thinking about the Great Commissions and how to impact the world and actually help them go. My question is that you? Or is that a loved one, someone that you know? If you're interested in learning what it looks like to take your next steps onto the mission field, even if you're afraid, our team would love to talk with you, to pray with you, not to pressure you into anything, but to help you and your sending church discern the Lord's direction in your life. Go to abwe.org/sendme, all one word. There you can connect with our team. So the Lord's putting on your heart that maybe you need to take some of this listening and thinking and put some shoe leather to your faith. Go to abwe.org/sendme and connect with our mobilization team today.
Right, that is the argument that Paul's making of why ministers should be supported. You know, they're saying right. You're ministering spiritually. They should be able to partake of your physical blessings, uh-huh. right? So, so let's talk about this missionary pastor thing for a second then. So should missionaries and pastors be thinking differently about long-term wealth strategies? That's kind of what you're into in your vocation, is helping people think about long-term wealth strategies and retirement and all of those kind of things that go into that. Should ministry people be thinking differently about that than lay people? And then what role does legacy planning play in the area of missions?
And ideally, it's going to take a lot more influence in the culture of the church. But ideally, a missionary shouldn't have to worry about that. They are sent by a church and the church takes care of them. Like, all right, we're going to use our resources so that you can do everything you want to do and your family is taken care of full time. And ideally, you do not have to drop below the median level of income of the church. Right. Even if you're overseas and the dollar goes way farther, we want to make sure that you're building up your resources so that when you do come back home, when you do retire in the United States, you're not suddenly in poverty in perpetuity. Right. We want to make sure that you can do your retirement contributions. We want to make sure that you can buy a house, one of the major investments that Americans make. Not necessarily saying it's the best investment, but that's kind of the only large investment that most Americans tend to make. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure you can still do all of these things, but churches tend to say, how little can we give so that you can do what you want to do? Mm-hmm. How small of a donation can we make so that you're sustained? But the Bible is not about sustenance. The biblical view of wealth is not sustenance. It's active compounding growth, to take a little and make it much. And if you're only barely getting by, you have no discretionary income because of the way that you've been supported, you can't compound it. And that's not fair to your kids. I know a lot of SBC churches or a lot of SBC missions organizations, your kids get a free ride scholarship to any SBC seminary, which is great. But I think that's a poor way to make sure that can happen. And it really only gives them a seminary education. And while like Boyce College, for instance, is great, do you want a business degree from Boyce College that's free, or would you rather have the capability to send your kids to Harvard?
You have a choice.
Yeah, either a free, maybe, I won't say lackluster, that's probably not the word, but certainly less.
There's some great professors at Boyce. Yeah, I have a daughter that graduated from Boyce.
Yeah, and I went to Boyce. I love the professors there. But again, in the business world, I'm not looking for an MBA from Boyce. There's going to be a certain truncation of the capabilities, what you can do for your kids because of the way we've tended to set things up. So I would love it if missionaries could basically never have to worry about finances ever, and if the churches could take care of them as opposed to having to ask a bunch of other people beyond just that they're sending church, if that you could spare, you know, $50-$60 a month to help support me in my missions, and then sending out newsletters as if that's some sort of transactional approach. Look, here's where your money's going. And you get a nice newsletter. So you get those endorphins and you feel better about yourself for 5 minutes while you read it. There's a lot of things I would ideally like to change so that it's more in line with the biblical view of wealth. Because Paul was taken care of well, actually, on several occasions. He's like, thanks for the money, guys. That was a lot. So he was taken care of relatively well. And then he sewed tents in order to make ends meet. In fact, the verse that most people point to, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, mm-hmm. is right after he received a massive donation. So mm-hmm. he's like, I've learned to live in poverty and in wealth. Mm-hmm. I can do this. I can do that. I can do this. I can live in any way, any motor function. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. But again, most people tend to think that and be like, oh, great. And they just focus on the hardship. I can do all things that are hard through Christ who strengthens me. When Paul is saying, no, any mode of being, any level of wealth, you can do that too. Right? Christ strengthens you. He will keep you from the temptation of misusing that wealth if you have it. And he will keep you sustained in poverty if you have that.
And what I love about that emphasis in Paul, the way he was taken care of, is rather than limiting his options, it actually expanded his options, right? So when he's in Corinth and he knows that it's not going to be to their benefit for him to take anything from them because of kind of the way they're wired and how they would use that against him, which they, you know, they found new things to hold against him, which is just mind blowing, right? When anytime as a pastor or a missionary, you start feeling like you're not appreciated, just like at Paul and the church of Corinth and all he did for them and the way they still treated him. And yet it's still his love for them. But because of the way he was taken care of, he had options where he could, in that situation, say, you know what, I'm not going to take any funds from you. I'm going to make up the difference through my work. And that was an option that he had. And a lot of times our missionaries just don't have the options, right? They've got one way of doing it, and it's such a tight fit that they have no wiggle room, right? And same thing is true with a lot of pastors. And so that kind of goes that second half of that question then, like, what role does legacy planning, how could that change the way we think about missions and missions funding then?
I do want to touch, before I get to legacy planning, mm-hmm. On that sort of captive nature of the resources available to missionaries and pastors, because I see that a lot. And like, if you're a missionary on the mission field, things are pretty well locked in. You need to have a state of residence and a state United States address in order to get most of those accounts open in the first place. So you are stuck. Mm-hmm. So be wise, if you are not on the mission field quite yet, or if you know someone who's going on the mission field, to set a meeting with someone like me, maybe me, and we can go over actual like options while they still have them. Because if they're overseas, they are locked into Guidestone's really expensive life insurance and their 403Bs that don't tend to perform very well. Same thing with pastors. Generally, mm-hmm. If you're offered a 403B, you're offered some sort of retirement plan, you're offered some sort of additional benefit on top of just your money, it's going to be very limited in scope, and they don't tend to do very well because of the relatively captive audience, the relative monopoly mm-hmm. that you have. So it's better to start early and to get your own household in order before you deploy, essentially. Same thing with your budget. You want to make sure you're in a position of security and strength before you deploy your extra capital. Most people don't have extra capital, and they're still trying to throw it out there and grow it. And it's no surprise when they have to recall it in order to take care of an expense. Mm-hmm. And so we want to make sure that we're sort of thinking concentrically outward. You take care of yourself because you cannot pour from an empty cup. You take care of your family because he who does not take care of his family is worse than an unbeliever. You can't provide for your household. All right. Then we take care of our business, technically, our businesses. If you're a business owner, you want to take care of them. Then the community, the church, and then outward from there. Where I see a lot of people who don't have balanced budgets and aren't tithing to their church, but they are actively giving to missions organizations. Sir, that's not the biblical way to order your finances.
Right.
Have you considered doing this instead? All right. Let's make sure your own house is in order and your own church is in order before we deploy your capital farther. And just a lot of things in that nature. But legacy planning, that's going to be really important, especially if you have kids, a lot of kids, because there's the cultural mandate. We are called to be fruitful and multiply. And if you only have two kids, you're not multiplying. You've just replaced yourself. We want to multiply. It's going to be more than two kids. Not that I've got really strong feelings about that. I'm more Presbyterian in my theology in that regard. But you want to have lots of kids, and kids are expensive. And they are cheaper in bulk individually, but they still get expensive. And a church may not be willing to increase your salary just because you have extra kids. There are some organizations that will, like the U.S. Army, for instance, or the military. If you have extra dependents, you get extra dependent pay. Yeah. Every child that you have, you get a little bit of extra money. It's great.
The ABWE does, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it incentivizes that sort of structure of, okay, you want to grow? Great. We are going to pay you more to make sure that you can grow. So you end up with a really highly paid missionary with a bunch of extra hands in the field, which can be wonderful. Children can be a phenomenal resource when you're out in the mission field. They connect with people differently than you do. They can bring in more. Becoming all things to all people in hopes that you might save some. It helps to have some people that fit into different categories than you do, helping you on that mission. Well, legacy planning is going to be really important because your kids matter a lot. They should be the people you love second most in the world besides your spouse. Ordo Amoris, you're supposed to love your family, even your unbelieving children, beyond or more than your actual fellow Christian persons. I know that may ruffle some feathers, but that's the biblical mandate. We are called to take care of our family and not just our spiritual family. So when you're planning on leaving something behind, right, naturally, you're going to die. That's not an if, that's a when. Then you want to make sure that you're leaving something for your kids, something not just to remember them by, but to get them a head start, to get them going, to give them an inheritance, something proper so that they can take what you give them and grow. Because what's really hard is the capital accumulation phase when you don't have money and you're trying to get money. It's really easy if you have like $100,000 to go find other ways to make money. When you have $0, it's a lot harder to find ways to make money. So give them that head start. Give them that capital that you've accumulated so that they can go and do more things, especially if you have to split it like 12 ways because you had so many kids. Each person's going to get a smaller portion. So that's going to be a really important piece of the puzzle. Make sure you have a will, bare minimum, especially if you're in a more dangerous occupation, like a missionary overseas in like Papua New Guinea. There's a higher chance of you passing away. So you want to make sure that everything's squared away on that front. A trust should be simple enough. Simple revocable trust. You just want to get that set up and filed while you're here in the States. Can't really do much if you're overseas. Good luck getting a notary. it's going to be a tough time. And your advanced power of attorney, your advanced healthcare directive, durable financial power of attorney, rather. You want to get all that paperwork squared away now before you go. Or if you're going to have a break in between mission stints, if you're going to be home stateside for a year or two, establish residence and get those things taken care of while you can. It's not really, as far as I'm concerned, optional. It's not a nice thing to have. It's a necessity to make sure that your wife and children are taken care of, that you can take care of the widow and the orphan posthumously if necessary, and pass on what you hopefully should be growing and leave it to them without lawyers and politicians taking an undue share.
Well, all of this has been really helpful. I hate to cut it off right there, but we will have a chance to talk more in the overtime episode. But due to time constraints, can you just give us your contact information and how people can get in touch with you? If they've got more questions, they want to sit down with you and walk through their own financial situation.
Yeah, which I would highly recommend. I don't give blanket advice. There's a certain radio show host that does that, and he's cost Christendom billions of dollars. So I want to give you advice that works for you and your household with your unique time considerations, time horizons, moral considerations. It's going to be unique to you, not just, hey, open up this kind of account and invest in this kind of thing and make sure you get this squared away. Like, no, I want to make sure that it's built for you. And it's going to be very different from the guy right next to you, I guarantee it. So if you want to set a meeting with us, Dominion Wealth Strategists, you can go to www.reformed.money. That's a redirect to our website. Much easier to remember, reformed.money. Or you can follow us on Facebook, Dominion Wealth Strategists. That's our page. That seems to be our one with the highest engagement. We are also on X and Instagram, but you're better off probably just following us on Facebook. Yeah, give us a ring. Give us a call. Set a meeting with us. Introductory overview. Then we'll do a financial consultation after that, and then maybe a financial follow-up meeting after that. And our time is free of charge. We do not charge for our services. That's why the first hour is so important, because it takes a lot of explaining. Here's how we managed to make it so that we didn't have to charge you and we still get paid and we're doing this without compromise. So plenty of questions that need answering, as Gandalf once put it. So just set a meeting with us. We'll get you squared away and we'll make sure that you get to take full advantage of the entire financial services industry without compromise, by Christians, for Christians.
Well, thank you, Josiah. Great to have you on the show. And you can tune in and follow the overtime episode as we go deeper on some of these topics. But until next time, Scott Dunford for the Missions Podcast. Go and make disciples.